This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. The transportation levy to move Seattle concerns replacing funding for citywide transportation maintenance and improvements. If approved by the voters in the November general election, this proposition would replace the expiring Bridging the Gap levy and fund a variety of the city's transportation needs. $930 million would be collected from property taxes and cost the median Seattle household about $275 a year over 9 years. How would the funds from the transportation levy to move Seattle be used to improve the ability of Seattle citizens to get around? To help answer this question, I have as my guest Scott Kubley, Director of the Seattle Department of Transportation. Welcome, Scott.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Why was the transportation levy to move Seattle proposed?
Well, because of the way the city DOT is funded, we have a property tax levy right now that's called Bridging the Gap, and it's a 9-year property tax levy that expires at the end of 2015, and that constitutes about 25% of our funding as a department. And so with that levy expiring and the need to continue investing in transportation, the city proposed a property tax levy to replace that levy, the Bridging the Gap levy, and we call that the levy to move Seattle.
What is the overall goal of the levy to move Seattle?
I think it's all in the name. The goal is to help Seattle move. Right now, there's a lot of congestion in the city. Anybody that's driving, walking, biking, or taking the bus is going to witness that congestion on a day-to-day basis. And so what the levy has is a series of projects in it that are aimed at addressing congestion and safety and maintenance.
What is the history of the Move Seattle levy? How did it come to be put on the ballot? What was the process?
Well, the process for developing the Move Seattle levy was essentially, as a department, we looked at all of our different modal plans that we have. We have a pedestrian master plan, a transit master plan, a bike master plan, and we're in the process of developing a freight master plan, and we also have an intelligent transportation system plan, which is actually for our traffic signal system. And we use all of those plans to develop capital projects. And we run all of those capital projects through a prioritization process to highlight or to identify what are the needs for transportation investment. We then also look at what are routine maintenance needs that we have in terms of paving or repairing sidewalks, trimming trees, things of that nature. And we developed a levy proposal based on that, based on those needs. We then took that out to the public as a proposed levy to solicit their input. And they provided input at a number of different public meetings that we had. We had 3 public meetings. We had a number of coffee hours. We went out to district councils and community councils, different neighborhood groups, neighborhood centers, all in an effort to gather more input. We had webinars. We met with different groups, such as a group of organizations representing immigrants and refugees, and another organization representing small businesses, all in an effort to solicit input on the contents of the levy and the size of the levy. And what we heard from people almost universally throughout the city was 3 key messages. One was a need to increase funding for walkability. 27% of the city right now doesn't have sidewalks. And so that was a major point that we heard from people. The second thing that we heard from people was a need to emphasize safety, to design our streets in a way that is safe for all users. And then the third thing that we heard was the need to continue investing more and more into transit. That, you know, with all the growth that we're experiencing, we really need a strong transit network to serve that growth. So that's what we heard from people. And so then we adjusted our levy proposal and submitted it to council. And we put more emphasis in walkability, safety, and transit. And we put it forward to the city council. City Council held a hearing, or several hearings, on the levy proposal and then voted to put it on the ballot. And now it will go on the ballot in November, and the voters of Seattle will be able to decide for themselves whether it's something that they want to vote for.
Would you elaborate on the ways that the levee will help maintain and repair the transportation infrastructure we already have?
Sure. So it does a number of different things. One is it will repave about 250 miles of streets, and we'll focus that paving on our heaviest used arterials. So those are those that are carrying the most traffic, the most transit vehicles, and the most freight vehicles. Those are the roads that bear the brunt of damage as well from just day-to-day use. We'll also be saying we'll be increasing our tree trimming by 50%, so that's a big safety improvement for folks. When trees are trimmed, it's easier to see street signs. It's easier for folks to see pedestrians as they're walking or other cars. So that's important. We're also going to be repairing up to 225 blocks of sidewalks, refreshing pavement markings and crosswalks, and putting it on a four-year replacement cycle for all of our crosswalks, which again is a major safety investment. Upgrading our signals and modernizing our signal system is another important element of the levee. So things like that, and then there's other projects like retiming 45 corridors so that the signals are optimized to help move traffic reliably and effectively, as well as investing in new transit corridors and things like that.
Well, you mentioned taking care of signal synchronization. In what other ways will the levee help reduce congestion?
Well, there's seven corridors that we're proposing to add rapid ride level of service to. And what I mean by rapid ride level of service is improved stations, improved signal priorities for the buses, enhanced right-of-way, so putting dedicated right-of-way where we have the space so that the buses can run more reliably. And then, just like we're doing with Proposition 1, adding in additional bus service so that we can make sure that the buses are running frequently and they're running on reliable right-of-way.
Would you say more about how the levee will promote safety?
Safety is really important. Part of our charge as an agency, our top goal as an agency, is safety. And we have a goal to reduce serious and fatal traffic crashes to zero by 2030. And to do that, we're going to need to make all sorts of investments in safety. So what the levy proposal funds would be Safe Routes to School project at every single Seattle public school over the next 9 years. Investments in neighborhood greenways, which are what we call all ages and abilities facilities for people that are walking and biking. It makes it safer for everybody. Enhanced crosswalks, crosswalk markings, like I mentioned before, additional investments in protected bike lanes. So when you look at something like Second Avenue, it would be like that, an attempt to organize the right-of-way so bikes know where they're supposed to be, cars know where they're supposed to be, and it creates a more predictable roadway. So things of that nature.
Would you just touch on the Vision Zero program and how the levee will specifically support the goals of that program?
Well, the Vision Zero, it's an effort to reduce serious and fatal crashes to zero by 2030. And right now, we're a pretty safe city. We only have 20 to 25 fatal crashes a year. But, you know, if you're involved in one or know anybody that is, one is too many. And so almost every project that we do, one of the first questions that we ask when we're doing that project is, will it improve safety? So in addition to the safe routes to school, the greenways, the protected bike lanes, the crosswalk markings, we also will be having 10 to 15 corridors that we're doing traffic safety projects on. And those are projects where generally what we do is we'll rechannelize a street. So you can look at something like 75th up in northeast Seattle, where we went from a four-lane street to a three-lane street. And what we've seen is a dramatic reduction in speeding and an even bigger reduction in crashes. And that's a double benefit, right? Because we're having fewer crashes, and the crashes that we do have are less severe because people are going the speed limit instead of over the speed limit. So we're doing similar projects like that right now on Rainier Avenue, and we'll be starting another one on 35th Avenue in West Seattle. And so we'll plan on doing 12 to 15 of those corridors over the next 9 years if the levy passes.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Scott Kubley, director of the City of Seattle's Department of Transportation. Our topic is the transportation levy to move Seattle, which will be submitted to voters in the November general election. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on listener-powered KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. In what ways are the transportation needs of low-income citizens addressed in the Move Seattle levy?
Low-income residents are served, I would say, throughout, in that we're proposing investments in the Graham Street station in the Rainier Valley to improve access to transit for the community in that area. That's an area that was very important to the Filipino community and the broader Rainier Valley. Other investments in improving walkability, improving transit reliability, all help low-income riders or low-income residents get around the city. It also complements the investments we've made in Proposition 1 to expand bus service by 15% in the city and the King County Metro Orca Lift Program, which provides discounted transit service to low-income residents.
Let's touch now on funding. You alluded a bit to this earlier, but at present, where does funding for Seattle's Department of Transportation come from?
The Department of Transportation gets funding from a number of different sources. We get funding from the current Bridging the Gap levy. We get funding from the general fund. We get funding from street use permits that people pay when they're building buildings. And then we collect use fees from when people are occupying the right-of-way. So there's probably about 40 different sources that we get funds for when you drill into every single one, but the big ones are general fund, long-term bonds for projects like the seawall, or levy funds.
So the current levy is less than half of what the new proposed levy will be in terms of dollars. Why do we need that additional funding for transportation in Seattle?
Well, we're a growing city, and so that's going to increase the need to invest in transportation. So we have ever-increasing travel demands, whether it's on our transit system or people driving on our streets. And so increasing our investments will allow us to better serve that population, whether it's through new signal systems that operate more efficiently or making transit improvements that carry more people.
Why was a property tax chosen as the funding mechanism for the new levy?
So property tax was selected because I think that it is something that, you know, is well understood by voters. It replaces an existing property tax that is collected under the Bridging the Gap levy. And then also it's something that everybody pays for, whether you're a commercial property owner or a residential property owner. So it collects revenue from the entire city.
What would you say to those who are concerned the levy will be a financial burden to low-income citizens and those on a fixed income?
What I would say is that, you know, that is the case any time that we collect taxes, that it is increasing the burden on individuals. But that when you look at the proposed contents of the levy, that it is intended to serve all people as well. So investments in transit will help individuals that are reliant on transit, and that tends to be in this city low-income people or immigrants or refugees or folks that have particular challenges getting around the city.
Would you comment on the increasing tendency to rely on levies for transportation funding rather than on the city's general fund? Why is this the case?
The reason that the city relies on levies goes back to there's something called Initiative 747, which is an initiative that caps property tax collections at 1% increase without property tax levies. And so what that does is it means that if inflation is going up by 2% or 3% a year, which is pretty typical, that the general fund just cannot keep up with even the pace of inflation. So if you want to maintain the current level of service or increase it, then you're reliant on property taxes. And that's true of transportation, but almost any other service as well. And that's why I think when you look at parks, for example, we have a parks levy or an early education levy, because our general fund just can't keep pace with inflation.
To what extent are Seattle's transportation projects supported by state and federal funds?
They're supported by state and federal funds substantially. So we're counting on a lot of state and federal funds to help deliver all of the projects that are proposed in Move Seattle. It really varies by project. So something like the Madison Street BRT, which is proposed in the levy to Move Seattle, is going to be reliant on getting a small starts grant from the federal government, but also the passage of Sound Transit 3, should that go to the ballots in November. Other projects like the Northgate Pedestrian Bridge is proposed in the levy, but it's also reliant on $10 million in the state transportation package. And then we're also pursuing a Tiger grant, which is a federal grant to help make that project happen. Something like the Lander Street Overpass, which is also proposed in the levy. The city is proposing $20 million to go into that project, and there's $7 million in the state transportation package to pay for the Lander Street Overpass. So it really is project by project, but it's highly dependent on state funds and federal funds.
If the levy does pass, will it be adequate, along with the other designated funds, to meet the transportation needs of Seattle?
We're looking at a lot of different ways to pay for transportation. I think the next thing after the levy that is probably the most important investment the region could make in transportation would be a Sound Transit 3 proposal to send light rail into Ballard and West Seattle. That's going to be an important investment for the region to consider, and something that we've been looking at for longer than 40 years now, if you go all the way back to Forward Thrust.
You are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Scott Kubley, director of the Seattle Department of Transportation. Our topic is the transportation levy to Move Seattle, which will be submitted to voters in the November general election. To what extent are the projects proposed in the Move Seattle levy spread out among different neighborhoods?
They are spread throughout the entire city. So the projects, they're very much based on need. But when you look at the needs of the city, they're different in each neighborhood, but every neighborhood has needs. So some neighborhoods may have a paving project while others have more of a safety bent. And it's really just neighborhood by neighborhood, but it does touch the entire city.
What would you say to those who are concerned the levy doesn't do enough to support those who drive cars?
I would encourage anybody that wants to know more about what's in the levy to do some research on it and see if it satisfies their needs. I think we're trying to balance. The levy makes investments that helps all modes. It helps all modes by organizing our right-of-way, so making sure that bikes have clear places to go and cars have clear places to go and that we have safe places for pedestrians to walk. But there's also investments in traffic signal timing so that vehicular traffic moves more efficiently. There's projects in there for what we call adaptive signal control, which is something that allows the traffic signal to adapt and the timing of the traffic signals to adapt based on the traffic that is there. And so we have funding for that in the levy for the Mercer project. And so essentially how that type of project works is if you've ever been stuck at a traffic signal and you've got a red light and you don't see traffic anywhere around you, but you're sitting there waiting for the light to turn green, and the adaptive signal system will give you the green light because there's no other traffic around.
Would you highlight some of the specific projects to promote walking in Seattle?
I think that there's several. One is that we are looking at over 150 blocks of new sidewalks throughout the city. We're also looking at different ways that we can deliver walking improvements at a lower cost. So a good portion of the cost of any new sidewalk is the drainage, the need to put in new drainage systems, new sewers. And so we're looking at, are there lower cost options that we can put in that allow or create improvements to the walking environment but don't require putting in new sewers and new drainage? That will lower the cost of walking improvements and allow us to spread our dollars further. The other thing that we're looking at is partnerships with SPU in Broadview and South Park, whereby SPU would be making investments in drainage in those two neighborhoods, which are flood prone. and we would be making walking improvements at the same time.
Would you also highlight some of the projects that support bicycling?
There's a whole number of projects in there that support bicycling as well. 50 miles of protected bike lanes and 60 miles of neighborhood greenways. Again, those are spread throughout the city, and they're a product of our Bicycle Master Plan, which highlights where biking facilities are needed.
And what is being done to address freight mobility?
So we have a freight spot improvement program that comes out of our freight action plan, and we're fully funding that. It's $15 million over the 9-year period, and it funds a small freight spot improvements, whether it's a paving project or a signal system for freight traffic. The other thing that's in the levy for freight is $20 million for the Lander Street overpass. And if the Lander Street overpass cannot be fully funded, that $20 million would stay in freight projects. They would be allocated to other freight projects. And then lastly, reconstructing East Marginal Way, which is an important freight street in the city.
How will performance be tracked if the levy passes?
We have a performance dashboard that we have rolled out on our operating performance, so how quickly we fill potholes, trim trees, things of that nature. We will be rolling out a capital projects dashboard that shows whether our projects are on time and on budget and within scope. And we'll also continue to have an oversight committee for the levy. Bridging the Gap had an oversight committee that lasted for 9 years, and we actually had some members on that participated in the levy oversight committee for all 9 years, and we would continue to have an oversight committee.
How much flexibility is there to change the proposals in the levy once it passes?
So one of the things that council heard from people as they were weighing whether to put the levy on the ballot was the need to have some certainty in how the funds are spent. And so in addition to having an oversight committee, the levy proposal restricts funding to those three categories: safety, congestion relief, and routine maintenance, and it sets the funding level for each of those categories.
Overall, if the levy does pass and the proposed projects are carried out, how much easier will it be for Seattleites to get around?
You know, it will be easier for folks to ride transit, hopefully, because we will have more reliable transit. It will be easier for folks to drive because we will have signal systems that are modernized and better timing on those 45 traffic signal corridors. It will be safer for people to walk because we will have made investments in sidewalks and pedestrian improvements and crosswalks. So it will be easier for people of all modes to get around.
What if the Move Seattle levy doesn't pass? How will transportation needs be affected, and what will be the next steps to deal with that situation?
Well, if the levy doesn't pass, then we will readjust our capital program, and we will make some decisions on how to prioritize our work given that level of funding. And what that would mean is that we would be making decisions on whether we defer maintenance on streets so that we can continue to make traffic signal improvements, or maybe we would defer making investments in our signal system so that we could do routine maintenance on our streets. So that's the kind of decision that we would be making if the levy doesn't pass, is that we would be resetting our work program to reflect that level of funding. But it would mean that we were doing less work.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
I think the message that I would leave the listeners with would be to go into the levy. It's on the City of Seattle's website, so www.seattle.gov, or you can just Google Levy to Move Seattle, and you'll get to the right link. And look at what's in the contents of the levy, and if it looks like something that you support, then you should support it, and if it looks like something that you don't support, then you should elect to not support it. But I would encourage everybody to do their homework and make the decision that works best for them.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Scott.
Thank you.
You were just listening to Scott Kubley, director of the Seattle Department of Transportation. For more information, check on the web at seattle.gov. Again, that's seattle.gov. The sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters program you have just heard will be on the streaming archive section of KEXP's website at kexp.org for the next 14 days. In addition, sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts along with KEXP's music podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on demand, and then podcasting. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on listener-powered 90.3 FM and KEXP.org.